content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors. Great companies like Sun Warrior, the pioneers of plant-based protein. From the sun to the plant to you, go to sunwarrior.com to learn more about all the products and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. Enviromedica, makers of Terraflora, a novel broad-spectrum symbiotic combining spore-form probiotics and advanced food-based ancient prebiotics. Find Terraflora and the full line of products at enviromedica.com. Castor and Pollux, the new standard in pet food, the only complete line of USDA organically certified pet food. Crazy Water, infused by Mother Nature, not some random factory. Paleo Magazine, now all digital. Go to paleomagazine.com to subscribe. The Wellbeing Journal, Veg World Magazine, the International Society of Sports Nutrition, and Thorne Research. Visit our dispensary at oneliferadio.com for 20% off and free shipping. You can find more information on all of our sponsors, including links to listener discounts, on the oneliferadio.com sponsor page. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio.
Higher, baby. You're in the right place. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia, as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. How you doing today, Ronaldo?
All is well. Today is my son's first birthday. I'm very excited.
Can we? You want to sing him happy birthday together? And your son Antoine is his name, and he's a year old today. And Von Eaglin will be on after the break. Jared Ramirez coming up here in just a second. And he just had a baby. What, two or three months ago? So we're going to talk about what that's been like for him and Katricia, his wife. But so happy birthday, Antoine! Do you want to sing him happy birthday?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay. I might be louder than you, so you're going to have to. You know what? Let's hear your voice. I want to hear you sing him happy birthday, and I'll just kind of chime along. How about that?
All right, I'll start it off. Ready?
Okay. Right. Yeah.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday
to you.
You.
Happy birthday, dear Antoine. Happy birthday to you.
I love it. How sweet. How sweet. And that's such a great age. Oh, my gosh. But you were saying that he's starting to realize that he's got a voice and he's using it.
So. Yeah. Yeah, he got some pair of longs on him.
Yeah. And I told Ronaldo, wait till he goes through the biting stage. I remember being in a jewelry store to get I get my watch cleaned or something. I don't remember. It was like, I don't know. Well, I guess it was about 21 years ago. And my little daughter was right at about the height of my inner thigh, and I wasn't paying attention to her in a jewelry store. And so she bit my inner thigh as hard as she could and sent shockwaves through my body in this jewelry store. And I remember thinking, oh, my gosh, what do you do with that? So I know a lot of people are going to judge me, and that's okay, but I bit her back to show her that told her it was bad. And I bit her back, of course, not so hard, and on her hand to show her that biting hurts and never to do it again. So that's my bite story.
Was it their last time biting?
Yes, it was. It was the last time she ever bit anybody. It's for me. Yeah, that was it. But, I mean, I think it's that way with anything, that we always, behave differently when we have a better understanding of the pain that people are going through, or health issues, or whatever it may be. And I think this is a great time to introduce our first guest, Jared Ramirez. He is the CEO of Enviromedica, makers of Terraflora, and he's also a sponsor of One Life Radio. Enviromedica is a natural health and wellness company founded in 2007. I can't say enough good things about this company. They're absolutely five-star, first-class, amazing products, inspired by nature and ancestral health. They make premium foundational products to support whole body nutrition and help people achieve optimal health. You can visit them at envirometica.com. That's envirometica.com. Jared, always a pleasure. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. I always love talking to you. Your scientific mind blows most people away that I know that listen to the show regularly. And today we're talking about why soil-based probiotics are different. So, you know, we've talked about in previous segments about the benefits of probiotics, but different strains can have different benefits, correct?
Correct. I mean, soil-based organisms, they're also referred to as spore-based microbes, are really kind of a lost, what we believe to be a lost component of digestive health. You know, these are effectively they're environmental microbes that would be present in organic productive tilth. You would have naturalistic exposure to them, eating, you know, fruits and vegetables out of your mm-hmm. garden. But, you know, through kind of the modernization of the food system and industrial agriculture, you know, much of this, most of it has been lost. Most people do not have exposure to these. And so through our products, we're basically reintroducing that.
Well, you know, and, you know, I always read a lot about probiotics. As you know, I've been fascinated with it for a very long time. I really have. And so, you know, a lot of people don't understand soil-based, spore-based probiotics. You know, what's the difference and how do these types of probiotics work for the body? So when did they, you said that people, you know, and we know this, that it wasn't a bad thing that our vegetables or fruits had a little bit of dirt on them, even microscopic, because that's where all the good microbes are. And then, like you said, we became so sterilized. So when did the science of putting spore-based probiotics into probiotics, when did that start in this industry?
You know, that's a good question. I think that if you include the EU in that equation, I would say as long as about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, you know, when it really first took hold. You know, the probiotic industry at large really was kind of born out of looking at, you know, kind of basically baby poop, right?
Yeah.
They looked at the, you know, feces of babies and found certain microbes in there, and it kind of took off from there. And, you know, and so the industry at large has been kind of dogmatic over the past 20 years. And, you know, the lactobacillus and bifidobacteria strains have kind of dominated the space. And these are strains that you would find in, basically, they're milk cultures. You'd find them in yogurt, you'd find them in fermented foods. And they are, they do have a wide benefit to the body. However, they're incredibly sensitive to manufacturing conditions, to heat, to light, to storage, to moisture. I mean, you name it, they're sensitive to everything. And that's why, you know, most of the products on the market that contain these particular strains, you know, they're basically, the potency is measured in how many hundreds of billions of microbes you can introduce. And the reason mm-hmm. for that is because the majority of those die off through shelf, sitting on a shelf, through manufacturing. If you're ordering, you know, probiotics through Amazon, that's a huge channel for supplements mm-hmm. these days.
Yeah.
You know, most people are not aware that Amazon warehouses get up to 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and virtually all of the products that are probiotics are affected by those temperatures, and you see massive die-off. And so by the time it reaches the end consumer, what you have in there is maybe 2 to 3% of the original viability of the product.
Wow.
So spore-based microbes are not, they're not subject to those same limitations. If the conditions are not favorable, they effectively have a, what's called an endospore coat, which protects them from heat, from moisture, from manufacturing conditions, from stomach acid, and so they can survive much better through the supply chain and through the end user to deliver those benefits.
Yeah, they're so much more hardy. They're just hardier microbes, right? And based on their history, naturally, right, from coming from the earth instead of being manufactured by man.
They are. I mean, they're absolutely. I mean, you can, you know, using some kind of extreme analogies here, you can send these microbes into outer space, right, and bring them back, and they'll still be the same. You know, that have the same level
wow.
of viability. And in fact, on our side, there to kind of wake them up, you can actually heat them up to around 160 degrees to wake them up, and that's why they can survive through different process elements like baking. You can put them in baked goods, and so the opportunities to deliver benefits to a wider audience, I think, is much better there.
Well, let me ask you something. I'm getting ready to make some homemade bread, I think, this evening, and could I put some of these probiotics like in the bread, and they would, you know, they would survive the oven and be a heartier, healthier bread, kind of like sourdough, except better. Could I do that?
You sure could. So I'm not a baker, so I don't know exactly what temperatures you're cooking at or you're baking at. Yeah, that would be fine. Those are stable up to those temperatures. So absolutely.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm reading this from your website, enviromedica.com, that it is important to point out that bacteria have a large evolutionary head start on humans, that bacteria represent the oldest known life on the planet with evidence of their existence in rocks that are 3.77 billion years old, and that bacteria have evolved to fill every ecological niche on Earth, from the deepest ocean trenches and volcanic mid-ocean ridges to extreme saline environments to subglacial lake environments to deep within the Earth's crust and into the mantle. And so, having read that, I mean, it only makes sense that spore-based probiotics are the way to go.
Well, I think that it's a melding of both, right? So I think that fermented foods do definitely serve a purpose. I don't want to diminish the value of the more common strains that you see on the market. However, it is important to understand the limitations of these other probiotic products, right? They're just inherently weak when you bring them through the manufacturing process and try to encapsulate it and put it in a finished product and put it on a shelf. And then, you know, so yes, I think that, you know, in a, you know, if you're making your own homemade fermented yogurt, for example, okay, and again, these are ballpark numbers, but you're going to have trillions of bacteria, trillions of microbes in a homemade culture, right? Whereas in a finished product on the market, you're going to have billions. So the difference between billions and trillions is substantial, and so, you know, if you're able to deliver these massive amounts, they do have benefits, right? And even, you know, and this is getting a little off track, but even dead, you know, dead microbes also have benefit to the body, which is a, you know, there's plenty of research supporting that. That being said, absolutely. You know, so that being said, spore-based bacteria, I think, are critical, you know, because most people do not normally have exposure to these microbes through dietary means or just being out and about. So, so it is important to supplement these, and I think that they, you know, we have found them to be more impactful, and especially delivered at much smaller doses.
Well, it's fascinating science, and I know that this science is really starting to heat up, if you will, because it's fascinating, the science, but we're going to talk more about that right after the break. Everyone, stay tuned. We're talking with Jared Ramirez. He is the CEO of Enviromedica, makers of TerraFlora. We'll be right back. You're listening to One Life Radio.
Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. get a good feeling.
Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, and I've got Jared Ramirez continuing on here. He is the CEO of Enviromedica, makers of TerraFlora, and a sponsor of One Life Radio. Enviromedica is a natural health and wellness company founded in 2007. Inspired by nature and ancestral health, they make premium foundational products to support whole body nutrition and help people achieve optimal health. You can visit them at Enviromedica.com. That's Enviromedica.com. Okay, so Jared, right before the break, we did have a lot of talk about soil-based probiotics. So Are soil-based probiotics good for SIBO or small intestinal bacterial overgrowth that so many people suffer from?
We do have clinicians that do utilize soil-based microbes, spore-based bacteria. So typically, and again, I'm not the clinical expert on SIBO. I think there's a lot of dissenting opinion about the accuracy of the testing methodology out there regarding SIBO. However, we do work with a lot of clinicians that specifically use spore-based bacteria for patients that they believe do have SIBO. So, but that's primarily driven by some of the misconceptions around your more common. Lactic acid-based strains, so your lactobacillus and bifidocultures, which typically they feel contribute to the progression of SIBO, whether it be, you know, misplaced or not. I can't say that.
Interesting. Well, you know, during the break, I got this question for you. Is it important to know which specific probiotic my body needs, or is any probiotic beneficial?
So I do think that all probiotics do have a benefit. But in terms of what that benefit is, it can be very wide ranging. You know, if we think about the gut microbiome as a very large community, and each one of those members has a contributing, basically a contribution to that community, like any community, you know, that has. You know, you have your law enforcement and firefighters and, you know, blacksmiths and people that, you know, whatever it is, you know.
I love that analogy, actually. Yeah, I like that.
So they all have a contributing input. I think that at the baseline, though, they all stimulate the innate immune system. So that is pretty well informed at this point. However, certain microbes do possess abilities and basically genetic features that allow them to do other things that other microbes cannot. So in the case of, let's say, the strains that we utilize in TerraFlora, our two flagship strains produce antioxidants. They're basically what are called carotenoids. So carotenoids are found in, it's like the lycopene in tomatoes and the pigmented antioxidants you see in fruits and vegetables. Some microbes can produce their own antioxidant carotenoids. And so that's a very specific genetic feature of the microbes, the spore-based microbes that we utilize in TerraFlora. And even more so, one of them produces abundant amounts of riboflavin, which is vitamin B2. They're different characteristics shared by different microbes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some kombuchas have that in it, the B12, don't they, as related to that bacterium?
So B12 is actually only a handful of microbes produce those. I'm not familiar with the ones that are going into kombucha that produce B12. I will say that in general, I mean, kombucha, depending on the source, the majority of them are going to be extremely high in sugar. I've always been a little cautious to recommend kombucha. I think that you know, in moderation, it can be helpful. But
absolutely,
the net negative from drinking liquid sugar is probably not the best path, right? Because sugar disrupts the gut microbiome.
Absolutely.
It selectively feeds groups of microbes that you do not want to grow more of. So,
oh, absolutely.
So I, so it's important to have some context for these things, and kombucha is a good example of that.
Well, yeah, and you know, I'm glad you brought that up because I mean, as an industry, oh my gosh, it has blown up in the last 10 years. And I'm familiar with a lot of the players out there in that industry. But the sugar is a big deal. But I do think this, if like you said, moderation is the key to this. If you want to have a couple a week as a replacement as a soda or something like that, which of course. Is much better for the kombucha is much better for you than taking, you know, drinking a Pepsi or a Coke or whatever. I think in replacement, like you said, in moderation, it's a good thing. And if you use it in lieu of sitting down with a soda at dinner, something like that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's all about context. I mean, we, you know, in our household, we typically have a bottle or two of kombucha in the fridge, and we give it to our kiddos every now and again, you know, but we give them a couple ounces at a time, you know. So
yeah.
I think, again, you know, the human body doesn't like anything in excess, right? It doesn't matter what it is. And we've discussed that before on the air. And so if you're going to drink kombucha, that's fine, you know, but I think, if you're going to have a couple a week, okay. If you're using it as a soda replacement, which, again, I would advocate to get off of that completely. But
right.
Point being is, you know, if you go to, you know, if you have the perception that kombucha is a upper-end health food and you're drinking one or two a day, that's probably the point where you want to do a temperature check and make sure that's something that's good for you.
No, absolutely. I agree. I know people that drink two a day, which is too much. It just is. It's too much sugar, period. Any additional sugar like that. But I do think that what you need to do is just read the label, you know, read the label and pick the brand that has the lowest amount of sugar. There are some out there now that have that fizz that so many people, that's for me what it is. Like, I love the burn, you know, I love the burn in my throat because I haven't had a soda in many, many years, nor would I. I don't want the sugar in my body for the same reasons that you talked about, you know, sugar disrupts the your gut microbiome. I mean, it's scientifically proven. And so you really do want to watch your sugar intake, especially when it's something that seems, you know, so harmless as a drink, right?
Well, correct. And I think that's my main point, right, is that when you take, you know, and there's a lot of this in the natural products industry. You know, I've been in the natural products industry for 15, 16 years now. And, you know, you know, you can dress it up, right, to make it look like a health food, right? But that does not make it so, right? And so, you know, some of the kombucha drinks that I've seen have upwards of 20 to 26 grams of sugar per serving, per bottle, right? And that's an excessive amount of sugar. I mean, that is a lot and is absolutely disruptive to the body, the gut microbiome. And that's not even mentioning its impact on your blood sugar, your insulin control, you know, and you know, since we're talking about this and COVID is around us, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that, you know, blood glucose control is one of the best preventative steps you can take. For preventing complications with COVID. There's a study that I saw last week that just came out. I want to say it was from the UK. Basically, they looked at everybody coming into the hospital with COVID, and it was 50%, right around 50% of all patients coming in showing advanced complications and having mortality from COVID had undiagnosed hyperglycemic conditions. These are people that had no previous diagnosis of diabetes, but had fasting blood sugar values that were quite high. And so it's critical to make sure that we're controlling our blood glucose and reducing our sugar intake, primarily in the form of liquid sugar drinks, is going to be the first stop.
Absolutely. It's all connected. You know, on your website, you write about Dr. Mullins, who wrote an eye-opening piece about the correlation between obesity and imbalance of the gut flora. He says that your gut flora represents a high diverse ecosystem whose composition is unique, is as unique as your fingerprint. And so all these things matter. They do, especially right now when we're fighting COVID-19, as you said.
Absolutely. And you know, you can, even in animal husbandry, you know, they use, just kind of a sidebar, which I find to be interesting, is you can use, the reason why they use antibiotics so profusely in animal husbandry, one of the ancillary benefits for them is that it preferentially knocks down a very specific group of microbes in the gut and allows another group to flourish, which extracts more energy from the feed. So they use antibiotics to extract more energy from the food sources, which are typically grain, the grain sources that they're giving these feedlot cattle. So the gut microbiome is pivotal in basically. Oh, I am so sorry. That's my dog in my office barking here.
No apologies. I actually love it. I love the spontaneity. And I have 11, but right now they're all being very quiet because I got up super early and ran them around the property. But, you know, it happens here too. So no apology needed, Jared. I actually think it's cute as can be. Yeah. But no, continue on with what you were saying. I apologize.
No, just the point being is that, you know, there are, you know, in certain industries, they manipulate the gut microbiome to basically marble the meat, to marble out the musculature of the animal.
Wow. Well, so, you know, and probiotics, I believe, I take mine daily. Don't you think, especially right now, that probiotics are really something that you need to consider taking daily?
I do, absolutely. Again, you know, if we look at, you know, regardless of the probiotics in general, as I mentioned before, they do stimulate the innate immune system. Your innate immune system is your first line of defense for viral exposure, and that doesn't matter what virus, right? So, if you're, you know, it is an excellent measure to ensure that your immune system is conditioned in such a way that it can respond accordingly to any exposure that it might have.
Yeah. Any other news you want to talk about before we go to break? Anything happening exciting in the research world of probiotics or at EnviroMedica?
Well, we do have a new product coming out in a few weeks that we're excited about, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that. But it's a so again, I mentioned previously that that dead probiotics, which are referred to as paraprobiotics, can have a benefit to the body, and so we have a new one releasing to the market in a few weeks that we've been working on, and quite excited about that. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, it's always great to have you on the air with us, and thank you so much. I think people, when they hear information like this, when all of us are, you know, just kind of so worried right now about the health of the world and, of course, ourselves individually, it's nice to get on the air with someone like you that's so knowledgeable to, like, give us a little calm. So thank you so much, Jared. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Bernadette.
That's always our pleasure. You're welcome. Jared Ramirez, you guys, the CEO of EnviroMedica. That's what I take. Check him out at EnviroMedica.com, and we will be right back. Von Eaglin, it's exciting, and Patricia are both going to be on the line to talk about being new parents, and Von's going to talk about parenting. So stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio.
Now, everybody, have you heard? If you're in the game, well, then the stroke's the word. Don't take no rhythm, don't take no style. Got a thirst for killing, grab your vial, yeah. Woo! Put your right hand out, give a firm handshake.
This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, and I have Katricia and Von Eaglin on the line. Congratulations, you guys, on the birth of your baby, Kenlyn Asher Eaglin. Eaglin, born May 20th of this year. And so I have to ask you both, what was it like to bring home a new baby under COVID-19 quarantine?
Wow. So these are very, very different times, Bernadette, you know.
Oh, gosh. I can only imagine. And it's so great to have you guys back on the air with us. It is. And so let's hear what it was like. Katricia, we'll talk to you first since you actually did the labor to have the baby. So you get first place. Okay. So what was it like for you as a mom?
It was initially, it was really, I guess probably, you know, hormones and everything. I was really afraid, you know, just how vulnerable he is, not having an immune system, and, you know, being in the hospital worried if it's going to be extra exposure there. But we had a great experience. The hospital was great. I felt very safe. Even bringing him home, it was very refreshing to be home. I'm probably more conscious than other moms with newborns, so we haven't had any visitors or anything like that. But when he gets the, you know, when he gets about 3 months and he has an immune system, I'm going to be happy to have, you know, a couple inner circle people come by and help us so we can get some naps.
Oh, yeah. I can only imagine how scary it was for both of you. And so, Von, what was it like for you?
Well, I'll tell you what, that, you know, having a baby just by itself, you know, for us, it brought us a lot closer together. And so, I literally, in this, I don't want to get too graphic, but when I saw the doctor take my wife's insides out, and then because we ended up having an emergency C-section because of a couple of complications, you know, like, even talking about it a little bit, you know, it brings back a little bit of the trauma that I experienced, but I mean, nothing to the, I mean, can compare to what my wife experienced. And so, and I told my wife this, I said, now I know why they celebrate Mother's Day so much more than they celebrate Father's Day, because I see what they, I see what you guys go through, and I have a totally new respect for, you know, how it is, you know, women are able to, you know, their bodies change, the hormones, I mean, being there. And so, it was a really different experience, because being at the hospital, you know, they didn't allow a lot of people to come, and that allowed us to have a lot of time with our child. But at the same time, you know, we're the only people that he's been around. And so, it was good and bad. So,
yeah. What an honorable response, I might add. It really is, you know, but it doesn't surprise me. You know, you're such a good guy. You're such a good father, a good husband. And that's important. That's a big part of it. You know, for women, a lot of women don't have that. And they suffer because of it. They do. And the child suffers. So, I just love that you guys are so happy. And the comment that you made, that it made you closer. I think that's so beautiful. Yeah. And that's the way it should be. Right, Von?
You're right, because I think you're on to something, Bernadette, because, you know, I do a lot of research with couples, and I have a lot of couples that come into my office. One of the main things I say is that whenever a baby comes into their world, that is the pivotal moment where they tend to either grow a lot closer and their relationship integrates, or it becomes, there's a deeper, an intimate and emotional connection, or you see them develop this parallel life where they start living together and then becoming teammates just to raise the kid. And so it is more important, particularly for the husbands or the male partners and or whoever's the male in that relationship, to function in a way that he is very attentive. He is not emotionally dismissive, that he helps the woman, you know, throughout the pregnancy. Because if the male is not very integrated into the relationship, then you tend to see that split happen. And so for us, I think I was just trying to be really intentional about trying to be there for Katricia, trying to understand what she's going through. Although I can't experience everything, you know, it's very important that we don't allow our relationship to, you know, go by the wayside. And so, so that takes a lot of intentionality. So.
We have an app, and the app continuously reminds me that women, moms who breastfeed, have a higher likelihood of being successful when they're supported by their partner. And I've been very successful, and it has a lot to do with Vaughn being in the trenches with me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. It's important. It is. You got pregnant together, and it's important to raise the baby together. Not everyone has that good situation, but, you know, those that do count their blessings. But so I have to ask you, this is just like such a typical question, but who does he look like most?
You know, I think
he
I tell
like her. He looks does. Like Vaughn, but on certain angles, he looks like me.
Yeah, so that really makes him a very cute baby, by the way, Bernadette, you know. With
I'm sure. I'm sure he's a handsome son of a gun. Well, you know, and Vaughn, parenting can be so scary, and couples do go about it in different ways. So what are some parenting behaviors to avoid, especially in these first few months that are so tender?
So, you know, there are a lot of parenting behaviors to avoid. You know, one of the things that we talk about with kids is that one of the main things or the two factors that make kids successful is their emotional regulation and then their social relationships. Now, the thing about their emotional regulation is that, you know, it is something that is not necessarily always inherited. Yes, you do have a predisposition to have a certain personality. Yes, you do have a predisposition to, you know, to have, you know, to act in a certain way. However, parents can do a lot in terms of helping their kids become more emotionally intelligent. One of the main things they need to do, you know, is being able to understand how to label emotions. And so, and again, this starts at a very young age. And so whenever they are talking about how to label emotions, we call these magic moments, because the thing about emotional regulation is that you cannot get away from it when it comes to making decisions and reasoning. And so what many parents don't understand is that emotional processing and reasoning are tightly integrated into the brain. And it's impossible for any person to be reasonable or rational without emotions, because it's actually part of the frontal lobe of the brain, part of the cerebral cortex in a sense. So both of those are important to understand. So you have to have emotions in order to reason out things, because you can't make any decisions or problem solve apart from intuition. And intuition, again, is the thing that really helps us whenever we're making decisions. And so emotions are tightly connected to making decisions. Therefore, if a person does not know how to label emotions, if they don't know how to articulate their emotions, if they don't know how to manage their emotions with emotional regulation, then that is not a good thing. So to answer your questions, parents need to avoid not dealing with emotions. They need to deal with emotions. However, they need to not avoid not dealing with emotions, if I'm saying that. I know it sounds like a double negative, but with the language that whenever they're talking to their kids, that it must not be evaluative or judgmental in a lot of ways, you know. And so they have to learn how to see, feel, and then use emotions with labels. So,
and you said that they have to start at a young age. So does that look something like this? Okay, so you've got a two-month-old little baby right now, Kenlin. And let's just say Kenlin is crying, okay, and you're trying to figure out, you know, you go through the, is he hungry? Does he have a poopy diaper? Is he tired? You know, those are the top three that most parents will go to. So do you say to him, and Lynn, do you have a poopy diaper? Does it feel uncomfortable? Does the feeling make bear with me. I'm being very serious. I'm trying not to laugh.
No.
Yeah, you would say to Enlin, oh my gosh, you're crying. Are you feeling uncomfortable because you have a poopy diaper? Or are you hungry? Are you crying because you have hunger? Even though he doesn't understand those words yet, the fact that you are acknowledging that he's feeling something and you're trying to fix it, is that what you talk about? I mean, is that what you're talking about when you're talking about how to understand and label emotions?
You're actually doing what I would coach a parent to do. That is actually perfect, because the more you talk to the child, the more you interact with the child, the more their brain develops. And so there's a really good documentary on Netflix that kind of goes through this. It's actually called Babies. And it walks you through like all the things that babies go through, like their first steps, the first time eating, the first words that they have, even the sleep cycle, because it says like how baby's brain, like the hypothalamus doesn't connect to the hippocampus for a certain amount of time. And so, you know, it takes like 4 months for them to actually have a regular sleep cycle. But what you're doing, Bernadette, is actually perfect. So interacting with the child, letting them read your face, because the child is actually reading your face the whole time. Like when I'm talking to my son, I literally see his eyes track mine, go back and forth, go down to my lips, look at my nose, and then he starts making noise. So in his mind, he's communicating, you know. However, you know, what I'm saying to him is helping him to build his own sense of language. It's helping him to, is actually helping his brain to develop and actually helping him to read faces, which is part of communication. In fact, we talk about communication. Most of it is nonverbal. 93% of it actually is nonverbal. Only 7% is verbal. And when we look at, when we break up nonverbal communication, 55% of it. So in other words, the majority of communication is facial. And babies learn how to read faces more than anything. They can read faces better than any adult on earth, honestly, to be honest with you. So, because a baby can distinguish, you know, the faces within certain cultures more than adults can.
I was just going to go to breaks so that we have to go for station identification. We'll be right back with you guys. Everyone out there listening, stay tuned. We're talking with Vaughn and Patricia Eaglin. We're talking about their new baby that they've just brought home and raising a child to be successful. Everyone, stay tuned. You're listening to One Life Radio. One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, and I have Vaughn Eaglin on the line with his wife, Patricia. Vaughn Eaglin is a licensed professional counselor and supervisor and works with two group practices in the Dallas area. He is a certified couple relationship trainer and sees a wide range of clients addressing men's issues, anger management, abuse, and addiction, just to name a few. He is also a doctoral candidate at the University of North Texas in the Counseling and Higher Education Department. His PhD research focuses on couple relationships dialogue. You can find him at PrestonPlaceCounseling.com or follow him on Instagram at Vaughn Talks. He and Patricia are both on the line. We're talking about raising children to be successful. And right before the break, Vaughn, you were talking about communication is 93% verbal. And you were talking about emotional regulation, how to understand, label emotions. And so, you know, what will you explain what emotion coaching is in parenting? Because I know that's something that you wanted to touch on.
Yeah, so emotion coaching is the opposite of being emotionally dismissive. So let me just kind of touch on what it means to be emotionally dismissive first. People, or I say parents who are emotionally dismissive, number one, they have difficulty noticing lower intensity emotion in themselves or their kids. So in other words, the kid has to escalate for the parent to actually attend to them. That is not necessarily a good thing. A parent who's emotionally dismissive tends to see negative emotions as toxic, and they want to protect the children from them. So they'll want their kids to change emotions very quickly, almost like taking a hat on, like, okay, I want you to be happy, now I want you to be sad. You know what? You just scraped your knee. Let's get you some ice cream to make you, you know, to make you happy. They may even punish a child for being angry, even if there's no misbehavior. So they're going to tend to want cheerful children, and they see introspection as a waste of time, even sometimes dangerous. So that kind of parent doesn't have the vocabulary to label emotions, to label detailed emotions, and they tend to want logic and reasoning to control emotion. You know how guys sometimes if a woman comes to them and they'll say, well, why don't you just, they'll give them advice instead of actually listening.
Oh, I hate that.
That's actually what the parent is doing sometimes. They're actually doing some problem solving instead of actually listening to the child, because the child needs to understand that, again, all your feelings are acceptable. All your behaviors are not. It's okay for you to feel angry, sad, powerless, confused, hurt, you know, lonely, disappointed, like all of those feelings are acceptable, and we need to all, like, label those. So a parent who is emotion coaching is someone who does notice lower intensity emotions, and they see emotions as an opportunity for connection. And that's what we call magic moments.
Well, and, you know, emotions can be high, especially with a new baby. And right before we went to break, Katricia, you were sharing something with us. What was it that you wanted to let the listeners know?
Oh, I was going to say, you know, being around little people every Saturday, I can see how their parents coach them through emotions and assign emotions and coach them through what emotions are called what. For instance, one five-year-old child, you know, he says, I'm frustrated. And so, you know, as an adult, you're looking going, well, where did he learn, you know, what frustration is? Of course, he learned it from his mom or dad explaining it to him. And even more impressive little mama, I said, well, what were you like when you were four? She was like, I was just tedious. And, you know, just knowing, having that verbiage and being able to articulate feelings at such a young age is very impressive. And that has a lot to do with parenting and parents being able to help their kids assign words to an emotion.
Well, yeah, and that's what it's all about, you know, is raising healthy kids. We've only got about a minute and a half on. Would you talk about what are some of the traits of emotionally dismissive parents and how and if people out there listening can avoid that?
Yeah, so the main thing is that you don't want to punish your child for having an emotion. And then you also want your child to not see introspection of emotion as a waste of time. And then as you're labeling emotion, you're actually, again, helping to integrate the brain because the left side of the brain is labeling, the right side is feeling, and it's helping to integrate parts of your brain. You're making your child smarter by being able to label emotion. A lot of times, parents, you may even want to put a feelings chart on the wall so the kid can go up, how are you feeling today? And they can literally walk up, look at a face, and then point to what they're actually feeling. We do that with play therapy all the time. And so you want to avoid being emotionally dismissive. You want them to, like, be able to drop anchor, try to process what the feeling is, talk about what they're feeling, not necessarily just problem solve and try to make things better immediately. And so, and many parents who are loving do this unintentionally. So you have to learn what it means to be an emotion coach, not be impatient with the child, not see negative emotions as being unhealthy, learning to regulate the breathing, learning to understand why they feel a certain way, and then validating that. So, you know, it's okay that you're angry because your little brother stole your toy. So.
Yeah. All important stuff. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I hear the music. I'm so happy for both of you. And thank you so much, Katricia and Vaughn, for jumping on the air with us today. I know our listeners loved it. You take care, Vaughn. We'll talk to you soon. We've got lots to talk about now that you got a baby. We got to get some good information out there about raising good babies, right? Always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Take care.
All right, you take care, too. Everyone, you take care, too. Until tomorrow, you get one body, you get one mind, and you get one life. Get out there and make the most of it.